Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Tyler, we will get to some of the breaking news from earlier in the day regarding CM Punk, the announcement of AEW Collision, how Tony Khan's announcement played into that. But let's start with, because this is the Dynamite Post Show, talking about Dynamite, a little change in format on the show, opening and closing a little differently than normal. And they closed with Don Callis addressing his turn on Kenny Omega, with a promo, which was cut short by Kenny Omega coming out, followed by the Young Bucks and then Blackpool Combat Club, which led to, not unexpectedly, given the calendar, anarchy in the arena challenge for Double or Nothing, the return of Hangman Page. I should not bury the lead here. He came out to help even the odds before they got to that. So Hangman reuniting with the Bucks and Kenny to set up anarchy in the arena. What'd you think of the Gallus promo? What'd you think of the angle setting up that big co-main event at Double or Nothing?
Yeah, I was a big fan of it. I like, first of all, Don Callis, not to be left out here. I like in wrestling and really all media when the villain is very aware, you know, they're trying to portray that they're the victim, right? That they're their right, you know, in their own way. When you have a villain, he's just a villain to be a villain. It's not super effective, right? It's kind of Jay White and Juice Robinson level of villainry, which is, you know, kind of subpar. And Don Callis is trying to persuade us that he's truly a victim in the situation. And, you know, it's a character, but you can see his point of view, which I like. But the reveal with the Bucks coming out with the weapons, and you would assume that Hangman Page is coming out to join and even the odds and have a Avengers endgame level moment of, you know, two good and evil clashing together there. But AEW is not typically hit on these big moments. And I wrote at the end of my report here that that moment that we saw just a couple minutes ago was the first time in the 4+ years of AEW that I felt that those four guys, the Bucks, Kenny, and Hangman Page, have been used as top level stars that are all being cheered at the same time to a hot crowd and feel like they are big babyface stars who are doing important things on the show. And it's, you know, it's taken a long time to get here, but the fact that we've had this moment is kind of the true, you know, what the true peak of what I thought AEW could be when it first premiered. So I was a big fan of it, not to be too hyperbolic.
Yeah, I thought what we saw with Don Callis, first of all, was what I want to see more of with Don Callis. But I also do want to see more of him. I wanted to see more of him tonight, and part of it could be the clock. But that was a major turn. I wanted to hear more than I'm the reason for Kenny Omega's success. That's all he said, even though it took him longer to say it. And so what was the turning point? What was the trigger point? Give me more layers to this. That's not layered booking. That's not, why would he be loyal to him for so long and then not? Do you think that's baked into what he said or built into the angle here?
To me, I mean, him getting cut off tells me that I think that maybe is an opportunity next week for him to explain himself. Or
yeah,
it's him screwing them over at the pay-per-view and then him having a sit down, you know, the one or two Dynamites afterwards to explain that. So I think that's there. And I, you know, Callis has not been used in this way yet, but for him to be cut off when he was, it tells me, I guess I have faith, renewed faith in the booking decision here to extend that story. And we've had the big, you know, collision of physicality. So now next week it's a promo by Callis explaining why he's in the right to kind of be that last little icing on the cake of this feud instead of having another confrontation physically between the two groups. So I think that's safe for next week, but you know, I'm not certain of that, but I feel more faith in that happening than I would have maybe 3 months ago with AEW.
Yeah. Because I mentioned with Jason Pollock yesterday on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast flagship, our blue logo show. So everybody check that out if you haven't yet. Just search Wade Keller in your podcast app. You'll see this red logo pop up. The red logo pop up for this show, the post shows. Subscribe to that if you haven't, but also subscribe to the blue logo show for our flagship and other good content. And on that show, I told Jason that, you know, a lot of my criticism of AEW is not over pushing unqualified people. It's under pushing qualified people who I think deserve more time, a better chance to be featured, big high points other than bell to bell great matches. Cause obviously AEW is just fantastic at putting on amazing pay-per-views with, you know, one great match after another. And we obviously get those sprinkled into Dynamite. But in terms of the consistency of featuring wrestlers and managers outside of that context, sometimes it comes up short. And each situation is different. But with Callis, it just feels like there's – and I thought this when Kenny and Callis were the kind of world champ heel manager tandem, that might have had a chance to be legendary. And I think that came up short. And so with Callis, I just crave like this being the best chapter of what he's done. Think about how many times Paul Heyman has done great work and then showed up and could have just coasted off his reputation or lived on past glory, but he's reinvented himself and he just does one great performance after another. I want to see that from Callis. I want to see this angle spark or this storyline spark like months and months, if not years of great Callis content. And so tonight was a teaser of it, but I'm just saying I want more. I want to see evidence that he can step up and be just a strong heel character, a strong heel promo, and not only get himself over, but get over the wrestlers he's managing and the wrestlers that he's facing, and just be what I think he can be. And so this was an example of it that I think people who aren't familiar with his work prior to AEW have only got little glimpses of here and there. He had good crowd heat, and everything is set up for that to happen, and it's just a matter of putting in the time, you know, thinking through what to say and when to say it, and then doing it. I thought that Hangman Page and his comments about we are the heart and soul and spirit of this company. I mean, do we read into that? Maybe, maybe not. It works without the meta, without the undercurrent related to Punk. But it did seem a little inspired. And standing next to Kenny in the box, it felt like a bit of a declaration of, you know, we're here and this is our company. This is our show. We're the heart, soul, and spirit. But, you know, I mean, the thing about Hangman with the Bucks and Kenny, and I think the Bucks and Kenny can do better promos than they seem to have the confidence to even try to give. I'm trying to think of how to phrase that in the way that's precise. I think they're better than they give themselves credit for and deserve more TV time, but it takes some work and practice and having the material and thinking it through, not just kind of showing up and winging it, but I think they can do more. But when Hangman is with them, it just elevates the charisma and the promo side of them collectively, because they can play off of him, but he is so good on the microphone when he is inspired, when he's not mopey and pretending to be drunk and hang out with Dark Order. That was that fired up top tier star version of Hangman Page. So that ended on a good note too. I'm still not sure it's enough to get everybody to take side with them against Blackpool Combat Club, because John Moxley's speaking the truth to a lot of fans when he talks about how they're the real elite. So yeah, your thoughts on that, Tyler?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think they certainly wish that this crowd tonight in Austin was the crowd for the pay-per-view. I think they'd be successful in that endeavor, the way that crowd was reacting. But on the Don Callis front, he's a character in AEW that, you know, not that he's not defined, but I kind of write off literally everything he's done up to this point, because his character was kind of ill-defined and, like you said, was in and out and felt pretty inconsequential, as did most of that Kenny Omega world title run, for the most part. And this is like the first time that I think I've looked at him as someone who's a net positive, as opposed to just a net negative walking around with Kenny and the Bucks. And you know, on that front, you're looking forward to what he can do, who he can manage, whatever. I know you're not saying that's going to happen for sure, but you know, AEW's history of managers has not been a very positive experience for those managers and being treated with respect and as actual managers like Paul Heyman is in WWE. So I would like that to change course. And I think Callis is the guy to do it. So we'll see what happens there. And then on your final point there with Hangman. Yeah. I mean, he feels to a lesser extent, that's how Ruby Soho felt to me when she joined the Outcast, she kind of gave them a legitimate speaking role, and she felt more like the leader than I think most people would anticipate. And I think Hangman in this group feels like the alpha of a team that is on national television weekly, as opposed to having awesome matches. And all four of these guys can have great matches, but Hangman Page, I think he's proven it, is the most, when motivated, is the most, you know, North American television pro wrestler type character in the group. And it showed here. And obviously we can't leave this, the cold open here, without talking about the leather eye patch. I mean, anyone with an eye patch, it's a net positive, and it was totally badass and awesome. So whoever gave him that idea, if it wasn't himself, then kudos to you, because it really worked.
Very cool. All right, let's pause. Let's introduce ourselves, and then let's get on with some CM Punk talk, some AEW Collision talk. The big announcement Tony reiterated during Dynamite tonight, listed some dates for the initial tours. We got a lot to talk about there. We also have callers lining up and emails coming in. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, May 17th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter, which I've been publishing for 35 years, and the editor, publisher of PWTorch.com, our website, updated daily, including my initial reaction to the announcement today with what we know and what to think about what we know so far and what we don't know. Also, in that commentary, I also published a longer Keller's take with challenges that face any company that takes on new hours of programming, and what is unique to AEW, but also what lessons can be learned. I pulled a quote from my five-hour Torch Talk interview with Eric Bischoff over a dozen years ago, where we marched through in depth his journey in pro wrestling, including the times that we got to know each other initially when he was starting out in the AWA as an announcer in Minneapolis and in Rochester, Minnesota, at those ESPN tapings. And that's where I first got to know Eric. And I found out that he left the karate school that I started attending at age 9 or 10, right before I started going there. And we had the same instructor. So in that interview, he talked about Brad Siegel, his boss, warning him to fight back against higher-ups who were pushing for more content. And Eric said Brad warned him that they didn't have the resources, they weren't ready to take on Thunder, you know, 2 more hours a week, and it would water him down and hurt the product. And Eric regretted not pushing back more. That quote is in that article. That context is there, and people can actually go back and read the entire interview in our interview archives, which I linked to in that article, by the way, too. That's for VIP members. We've got our whole Torch Talk archives in our back issues and various special sections of the VIP website. So check that out and on PWTorch.com in the Keller's Take section. And then also go VIP if you want to dive into our massive archives. So the announcement is something we'll get more in depth on. But I also want to hear from our listeners, and either by email or phone call, and get your thoughts on tonight's show, but also the announcement and what we'll be getting into, which is the latest dust up controversy with CM Punk. So that's all coming up here on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. The other voice you hear on the show so far is my co-host tonight, Tyler Sage. He contributes to PW Torch's YouTube page, PW Torch's podcast, and he also writes the Dynamite Report alongside mine at pwtorch.com every Wednesday night. Tyler, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Wade. A fun night to be on the post show, so thanks for having me.
Yeah, glad to have you for a big day in AEW history. As can be the case, sometimes a very exciting day can also have some drawbacks when it comes to AEW. This was another one of those days. So I mentioned phone calls and emails. Give us a call and email us. The phone number, if you're live streaming our show right now, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, if you want to be on the show, push 1. That will flag you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be on the show. Got a ton of people listening right now on the switchboard at any time. If you do want to be considered to be brought onto the show, push 1. That will move you to the top of the queue with a symbol next to your name so we know that you want to be on the show. You can also email us if that works better, especially if you don't live stream the show, but you want to be part of it so you can listen back later. That email address is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. All right. So let's I want to get into the Punk stuff, but I also don't want to leave our callers on hold, and they might bring up Punk. So we'll talk about Collision, Punk, and all that momentarily here. But first, let's go to our first caller. Chris is on our priority caller list here. So let's bring Chris up first. Chris, welcome. Thanks for calling. What is on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Gentlemen, good evening. It's good to be able to stay up late for a change and call in and chat with you folks, especially on such a newsworthy night. I had actually missed all the CM Punk news until you just mentioned it, and a quick Google. I'm continuing to shake my head at somebody who I used to look up to a great deal as a wrestler and an overall person, and the more I see about him, the more I'm just like, my goodness, I should have been looking down at this individual. Yeah, I have no idea what's going on there. I want to talk about the Elite, though, just because they don't make me shake my head quite as much. Anarchy in the Arena. I'm not a hardcore guy. I'm not a big fan of walk and brawls and hitting people with creative objects and throwing people through sugar glass and stuff. But if I remember correctly, a lot of these matches have had a large dose of comedy included, and they really need to keep that out of this one. This seems so much more personal, so much more violent, so much more serious than any of the Anarchy in the Arena or the other one they had before that, where they had the Elite and Jericho's Inner Circle facing off. They need this to be serious, and they need this to be pretty ultra-violent for it to make any sense. Just on that note as well, I think the only thing that's going to help the BCC get booed is the fact that Hangman is back. He seems to carry a more universal approval than the Bucks and Omega do, despite the fact that he was the proverbial blue touch paper that lit everything on fire with Punk and everybody. I think he doesn't carry as much of the blame as the other three do with some of the CM Punk fans. And I think that might be the saving grace that gets the BCC booed. So, yeah, just those 2 points. See how you feel about that.
Tyler, speak on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was evident tonight with the reveal of Hangman Page, where not that it was a tepid response for when the Bucks came out, but it certainly wasn't a emphatic, yes, these are our heroes who are about to wage war, and then Hangman comes out, and you do feel that way. It was kind of the Sammy Guevara babyface cheers that we were muddling through tonight. That is the way I felt with Kenny Omega there. And, yeah, Hangman is the catalyst. And was the catalyst tonight to get that. So I think the point is very good. So yes, I agree.
Chris, what else is on your mind?
So I'll tag on to that Sammy Guevara line. I think this whole Four Pillars thing has been an excellent example of how to take a potentially great storyline and completely screw it up at every possible turn. They could have done something sensible with having all three of the contenders have a match tonight. They could have spoken about it right at the beginning of the show or even after the Wardlow segment and said, you know, each of the three contenders is going to have a match here tonight to show what they're worth or to get momentum or as a warm-up or anything. And they could have had the matches make sense. They could have been a showcase for the contenders. They could have made us all see them as legitimate threats. Instead, we had a nonsensical tag match with a flimsy justification with two opponents that made absolutely no sense and a partner that made slightly less sense. We had a two-move squash match, and we have Jungle Boy in a match against a guy who I don't think has won on AEW TV, but is supposed to be a big deal, that led to an incredibly predictable run-in. We had a limp, continued face turn from Sammy, who didn't get cheered until Justin Roberts pointed out he's from Texas, and then he gets cheered, and then he cuts probably the best babyface promo we've heard during this entire feud, even though he's the other heel in the match. He didn't come out with Tay, which is unusual for him. There was no heat at all for him, and they offhandedly mentioned, oh, by the way, he's now banned from the building because he is still a member of the JAS. Everything they could have done wrong with this segment, they did wrong all night. It made absolutely no sense, and it actually made me want to see that match even less, which I didn't think was possible.
All right. So tell me, let me throw to you on that. What was your assessment? Because I had some of the same thoughts that Chris had in terms of how the inequitability of how all three challengers were inserted into matches tonight. And it either feels, I don't even know how to frame it. It felt unfair to Jungle Boy. And if you have three baby faces and he's got to take on Roosh, who just came out, I mean, man, was he wound up and just going at it with a level of energy that was, you know, like intense and impressive. So yeah, your thoughts on Chris's points in particular.
Yeah, I'm probably in the same neighborhood, maybe not the exact same house on where Chris is, but it all the points are valid. And tonight, especially, it's just the nonsensical booking decision that you just laid out that Chris is talking about are all there and valid. My feeling tonight was more, you know, especially when Darby was backstage at, you know, whatever, the turn of the second hour talking about that. And before Sammy walked up, it just made me think that this whole story should have been just Darby and MJF, because that's the better storyline. He's the better talker of the three quote unquote baby faces. And it feels like a lot of work to do for MJF just to win and in a four-way match. So, yeah, and Darby getting this sort of match feels like he's the most protected from a booking standpoint to get the showcase tag match with the champion who's super hot in Orange Cassidy. And, you know, Sammy gets the Wardlow honorary squash match for some reason. And then, yeah, Jack Perry gets to get murdered on TV for a couple minutes and then get a roll-up pin to look kind of ineffectual in his role and feels the most out of place of the group. So from that standpoint,
with the tights,
it is
don't forget.
Not. Yeah, with the tights. So, if Sammy's going one direction, I think Jungle Boy is going the other way, at least with his in-ring antics. I don't think that's the plan. But, yeah, I mean, it to me is Darby feels like the only one who even has a slight chance to win this match. And then the other two are there for, you know, to pad it. And why do that when you're AEW and you don't typically do that? So that's where I am. I'm not as down on it. But, you know, I knew Roosh was going to absolutely destroy Jack Perry. And I'm just thankful he didn't end his career on that toss off the apron, because that was some of the worst stuff I've ever seen. And I was really concerned watching it live. So.
Yeah. I would have liked a little bit more framework about, you know, I like all three competing on you know, in warm-up matches, but the inequity of it jumped out to me. Sammy Guevara's promo, it's like there's a charisma that he has that oozes star power when he's a heel. And when he's a babyface, he's just plain. It's just the charisma is drained out of him. He seems likable. I mean, it's not like, you know, oh, get off my screen, you're boring. Well, I shouldn't say, it's not like get off my screen, but there's just something that's not there when he's just being smiling and nice. I don't know if this is a ploy with him saying I'm, you know, trying to act like he's friends with Darby and Perry, or respectful of them at least. And he's going to play as for suckers, and he really is going to try to give MJF a win early in the match, laying on his back for the payoff. I wouldn't be surprised. Ty Conti not coming out can be read multiple ways, but it helps keep him from getting booed because that is where things kind of go off track for him when he's a babyface, is the obliviousness of how people do not want to see them so lovey-dovey with each other. But promo-wise, it was like it might have been his best babyface promo, but it's still not a star promo. It's just it was a good solid babyface promo, and it was certainly good for him in a babyface role. He's struggled in that way. I still just think he's better off as a heel. And I kind of, what is that? Or, Tyler, do you think he is going to end up turning on Perry and Darby? And not that it'll result in MJF losing the title, but that at least he'll try to collect that paycheck.
Yeah. I mean, maybe 80% of that. I think he's certainly going to try and underhand Perry or Darby in that match. And maybe he'll think that him and MJF are teamed together, then MJF's going to screw him over as well. So he'll look like the ineffectual Miz-type heel who's outsmarted by someone who was blatantly planning on what he was going to do the entire time. So I feel more that story is happening with him. I mean, I certainly hope so, because as you laid out, him as a babyface is just – it's not terrible. It's just he feels like a, you know, mid-card guy. And he just doesn't have any intensity when he is really – a babyface or a heel. The only time he's intense as a heel is when he's kind of eating up the crowd booing him, and that's more smugness. And I think it's just like an issue with him as a wrestling character in general is that he is like, hey, this is what I am, and you're going to cheer me, you're not going to cheer me, but I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to wave my arms out and you're going to boo me, and that's kind of me being a heel. It's still not intense as a heel like Roosh is or anything like that. So I think that's more the issue with him and why he naturally should be a more of a heel long-term, just like his on-screen mentor, Chris Jericho, has been a heel majority of his career, and that's what's worked well for him. So, yeah, that's kind of where I am with him.
Chris, what do you think this is a ploy? Do you think he turns?
It's hard
to
really
turns
say.
Is the word, but...
Yeah, I think I fully expect him to eat the pin. I've been watching wrestling almost as long as you've been writing about it, Wade. And the guy who has the easiest win on the last, well, it's not the last show, but it might as well be, is normally the one that takes the pin. I can see him taking the pin. I don't know. I'm glad they didn't just write him out of JAS and not say anything about it. I think, though, that split is coming. I think they're going to try him as a face because I think Jungle Boy's going heel. He's been showing some heelish tendencies. He won with the tights tonight. And I think that is the swerve that we get. I think we see Jungle Boy sort of be disappointed in defeat. Maybe he's on the verge of winning and MJF gets the pin on Sammy. And then that turns Jungle Boy and we have a Jungle Boy Derby feud coming. I'd be all right with that. It's a roundabout way to get there, but you've got to do something with people who lose in title matches. So maybe that's the plan. I think, though, the go-home needs to end. The closing of the go-home show needs to be the four of them in the ring having a sort of stare down where we're not sure if Sammy is going to lie down. And we also start to get a few more hints about the Jungle Boy heel turn. That's what I'd like to see anyway.
What do you think of that, Tyler? Jungle Boy heel turn at Double or Nothing?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly would be it would buck the trend of what you think with that character, and I think that would be good for him. But, you know, if from the long arc of his character, you know, does he get back then with Christian Cage and Luchasaurus? I think that would be tempting, not for me, but from a booking standpoint. And then he's regressing as a character big time. But I also don't necessarily view Jungle Boy as a world champion, a future world champion. So is that the worst case scenario for when you need to book 5 hours of content? If you have Christian Cage and Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy back together and they're going for the trios titles as heels, like that feels like you can fill 15 minutes of content a week with that group, and that's a positive. So would I do it if I was had his best interest in mind long term as a character? Probably not, but it would be intriguing in that show and would be the swerve of the match feels like it desperately needs one way or the other.
Chris, how you're in Mount Pearl, Newfoundland. How close are you to some of the dates that AEW announced for the Collision Tour and their dates in Canada? And are you thinking of going?
A very, very, very long way. It's a 3.5-hour flight to Toronto. Okay. Fortunately, I'm already going there for Forbidden Door. My plan with a couple of guys that I'm going with, our plan is to see what time our flight lands because we get in Saturday night. We have like an hour and a half from the time we land until the show starts. So theoretically, it's possible. I don't know if you've flown into Toronto, but Toronto City is right downtown, and there's a tunnel you can take directly across from the CN Tower. So that's right by the Scotiabank Center. If we can get to our hotel and out again, we might try and buy tickets on the day of, or we might just go grab food and then relax until Sunday and Forbidden Door. But, yeah, the plan is to go.
Cool. Anything else you want to bring up about Dynamite tonight or anything else AEW related?
I feel like I have to say no and then bring up a couple of points just to get on your list. You mentioned the Wardlow segment. What is the point of having Wardlow beat down Luchasaurus with so much ease and Christian Cage 2-on-1 until there's a low blow? You've just completely ruined any chance of Luchasaurus being seen as a credible monster threat to Wardlow because he handled him so easily. The match with Christian Cage now, yes, it's a ladder match, and that is somewhat of an equalizing factor, but everything was handled so easily in a 2-on-1. Why would we buy him as a threat 1-on-1?
Tyler, what do you think of that? I think that's a valid point to make, given the various options AEW had in terms of how to frame things going in.
Yeah, I mean, I agree completely. I think the Wardlow character has been mismanaged for a long time now, even leading up to before MJF's fiasco this time last year. And the character is too strong from an in-ring standpoint, and you have to do every trick and every bell and whistle to get him, you know, to lose a match, right? You have an odd Hobbs transition run that doesn't help him. It doesn't help the Wardlow character. And, you know, besides that, Wardlow is unbeatable in any situation, but he still doesn't go for world titles, which doesn't make any sense. And, it then leads to you having to book squash matches week in and week out that have not elevated his character for a long time. And, I think it's really impeded what he can be within AEW, where some people thought he could be a world champion maybe a year or two ago, and now he feels like he's kind of stuck in this spot for a while. And, you know, when is he going to Ring of Honor and being a Ring of Honor world champion as like his peak? Because I think that's his trajectory. And I don't know how you reset that character. Jade Cargill has a lot of the same issues as well with the way she's booked. So it's the problem with the, you know, Goldberg type monster character and, you know, the Braun Strowman character early on in WWE, et cetera. So it just, that character never works long-term. And I think we're kind of in that rut of the period here, and to keep him at a level playing field, you have to hurt other characters like Chris just brought up with Luchasaurus. So I agree completely.
Yeah. Chris, did either of you have any thoughts on Wardlow's fashion tonight with the dress pants, the shoes, no socks or hidden socks, and a lot of ankle showing?
Just leave that for Flavio. Like, that's a European. Just stop. Oh, God, you're a monster. I remember hearing when Big Show first started turning more than a steak on a barbecue. Wait, a portobello mushroom on a barbecue. And I remember hearing monster faces don't work. With monster heels, you always can go the underdog route, but there's no underdog heel. Mm-hmm. Monster faces just don't work long-term. There has never been a case where a monster face worked long-term. And that's what we're seeing. And it's clear, even down to the fact that he doesn't wear socks with loafers, which just, come on. I mean, even Don Callis' shoes were nicer.
Tyler, did that jump out to you at all?
Yeah, just I didn't like the polo in general, especially for a big guy like that. It kind of flattens you out. And he's a guy, if I was him, I would never have a shirt on ever if I was on television. So that's, and the fact that he didn't wear the things that I think is a problem. So if I'm that jacked, I'm definitely, you're never seen a shirt on me on YouTube. So there you go.
I did consult Nick Barbati. I messaged Nick Barbati. He doesn't watch Dynamite, but I sent him a little photo of Wardlow's outfit. I needed to know, is this like the current look? Is this like, does this work on him? Because Nick is into fashion and men's clothing. And so I asked him, and he replied by sending me a photo of him wearing almost the exact same pants and shoes, with ankle showing. But he did it. So there's a realm that outside of Europe that is apparently fashionable, because I literally have no idea. So, nor do the two of you either, probably. That said, Nick did say that maybe a little too much Stanko was showing. The pants might have been a little too short. I thought it made his legs look really skinny. And yeah, I didn't think the it's just something about it. Like, I'm not an expert. I just looked at it and I'm like, I'm not sure that's a great look for his character, and I don't know what he's going for, but especially like so much ankle showing. But like I said, it's a fun little sidebar, because we never talk fashion here. Is this a good look?
I don't know if Nick Barbati is the person I'd be listening to for my fashion advice. I mean, the guy looks up to Madonna, so let's not forget that. I'm blacklisted now. I'm not going to be in the Nicky's club. But I mean, what do I know? I'm a burlesque performer. I wear glitter on stage for fun, so it's not exactly my strength either. On that note,
I did not know that. This is awesome.
Not only am I a burlesque performer, we just produced an all wrestling themed burlesque show where I opened the show as Gold Dust, because of course I did. So at some point, if you're feeling brave, you can look it up on YouTube. It's up there. I wanted to.
I will be emailing you for a link.
Do it. Just if you're brave. I do like to throw a couple of quick hits at you. But this one, I think, needs its own point. they really should have waited until the end of the Falls Count Anywhere match to announce the passing of Billy Graham. Announcing it right before somebody got suplexed through a table and ice cream stuffed in their mouth, just, it was tacky and it didn't work. I understand it's breaking news and you want to get it out there, but this isn't, you know, network news. You don't need to be first to the point. That could have waited 2 minutes until the match was over.
Chris, we have a question from Eric Kroll for you. Actually, it's just the general thing. He's listening, and he wants to know, does Hulk Hogan count as a monster babyface who worked?
Not really, but only because of who he faced. Because the majority of his memorable opponents were bigger than him. You know, you got Earthquake and Yokozuna and Zeus, and apart from Savage, like, they were all monsters who he. Yeah, Andre's bigger than him. Even Warrior to an extent. He was always coming from behind, right? So yeah. He could have been, but I don't think he really was.
Yeah, I thought of Hogan when you said it's no, you know, and I thought of bringing that up. But since Eric messaged with that, I thought I'd bring it up. I think you can, depends on your definition of monster babyface. Like Goldberg was a monster babyface. You know, in the way that he's, Ultimate Warrior in a way was too. But you know, you can argue Goldberg was kind of a one-trick pony, and he's made a lot of money, and people have chanted his name, and he's been in big, you know, special attraction matches since then. But it's sort of a full-time, fully engaged lead baby face. Like, they, once he got done squashing people, it was tough. You know, I mean, it was a challenge to book somebody with his limitations on the mic and in the ring. With Hogan, yeah, I mean, he was bigger than a lot of his opponents, but he also faced any opponent who was bigger than him too, and there were a lot of them. But he did, you know, he did take beatings, and his, while he was flexing and all that, he wasn't like a Bruiser Brody killer babyface type, or you know, or Stan Hansen, where you're just plowing through people. So I get the nuance to defend your point, but I also understand where Eric's coming from, and that thought crossed my mind too.
I can concede the point to some degree. I think the thing with monster babyfaces is they work until they have to lose, and we saw what happened when Goldberg finally lost. And they basically, the only way they got him back to where he was is to reboot his winning streak, right? I mean, the fact that he lost with a cattle prod isn't exactly helping things. But you when a monster heel loses, it's easy for them to get their heat back. But when a monster face loses, they can't quite do the same thing unless you turn them. So then you don't have a monster face anymore.
Yeah. All right, cool. Yep. Chris, anything else for us?
Yeah, a couple quick ones. I did notice during the Falls Count Anywhere there was a sign on the wall. If you'd have to be looking hard to find it, but it said seat filler waiting area with an AEW logo on it. And I found that
really
amusing.
I noted that in my report. I did. I saw that, and I noted it in my written report at PW Torch.
It's really hard to take Tony Storm seriously with that hairstyle. Like, really hard.
She got it from
I just wanted to see her wearing braces and speaking with bubblegum in her mouth. It just, the serious promo just didn't fit that hairstyle. And overall, I complain a lot when I call in. I don't get to call in a lot because it's late here. I really like AEW. I just wish they did more, like you said to Jason this week. I wish they did more with what they had, and they weren't booking it like Tony Khan's personal game of Fire Pro. Like, he just seems to be playing with all his toys in the sandbox, and he's booking for people who are going to watch anyway, and he's never going to grow his audience like that. And I'm afraid that with two more hours of it, we're just going to see a bunch more dream matches with very little storyline. So that'll hopefully transition you into talking about Collision, and I will leave you on that, folks. Thanks for taking the call, as always.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate you calling in. It's good to talk to you again. All right. Okay, so we can pivot to that. We had Derek on hold. He dropped off. So if you want to be next in line, give us a call or push 1-347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. Or if you're already on hold and you want to be on the show, push 1. Or email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. I want to get to an email on Sammy Guevara since we talked about him with Chris here. But first, Tyler, broadly speaking, and then specifically to Chris's point, what did you think of the hype for Double or Nothing? It is the second to last episode. This is the time where they needed to fill out the lineup quite a bit. And they did accomplish that. They're not waiting at least till next week to announce the co-main event and Orange Cassidy's title match and the TNT title match officially. So what'd you think in that regard?
Yeah, slight tangent I would offer from the previous conversation, John Cena as a babyface monster that succeeded, maybe not in our perspectives, but just food for thought, but I will move on from there. But yeah, I mean, I wish AEW would change this booking pattern a little bit where, you know that there's a pay-per-view if you watch the television about 4 weeks before the pay-per-view, and then it's, you know, weeks, 3 weeks out and 2 weeks out, like tonight's episode is 2 weeks out, where you get all of the matches laid out. And then so the fourth week before is kind of inconsequential. And obviously next week's show is going to feel pretty inconsequential. You're probably going to have a match that feels like it should be on the pay-per-view, full main event, that show. I'm sure they already revealed it. I just don't have it off the top of my head. But the pattern of crunching it all into this one show is not ideal. I think you could have definitely done the Orange Cassidy, announced that last week, and just spreading out a little bit and leaving something to still promote from a major level. I mean, I know the tag team match was set up, and obviously the Pillars match has been set up for a long time, but it crunches a lot into here. So, you know, I think tonight's episode did it as successfully as you possibly could with getting that much in there and getting, you know, all the heat for all the heels. And this week's episode is the theme for who are ultimately a lot of them are going to lose in at the pay-per-view. So I think in a vacuum, it was booked well if you're setting up a super show 2 weeks from a present date. But I just wish it would be able to breathe a little bit more in future pay-per-view buildups. But I'm not as opposed to it as I assume some other people are.
What do you think of Orange Cassidy, by the way? Kind of the way they went about, you know, Renee going, there were 20 people lined up at Tony's store wanting a title shot. Oh, well, let's have a 21-man casino battle royal. Was that too cute? Was it too contrived? Or was it clever and kind of fun?
Well, you know, Orange Cassidy's it's a case-by-case basis. I would say 99% of wrestlers out there, if they would set up a match, especially a babyface wrestler, setting up a match in this fashion, I would have totally hated it. But with Orange Cassidy and the run he's on, it feels right. The only thing about it is he's been on such a good run with this title, probably the best run this title potentially is ever going to have, at least in the near future, unless it's split on, you know, one show gets the TNT title, one show gets this title. I would like someone to beat him and really get some rub off of that, as opposed to winning a battle royal that feels cheap, and then that title then feels not as important for beating Orange Cassidy, who has not been beaten in a long time. So I would hope that he would win it and you can get that payoff. But besides that, it feels very fitting for the Orange Cassidy character for where this title is in the AEW landscape of not being super important. But yeah, I just hope someone beats him clean one-on-one to get a rub as opposed to kind of winning a fluke match that we're going to see if that does happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed, and I don't want to read too much into it, we didn't have anyone that we know of who's planning to call in who attended in Austin tonight. So keep that in mind if you're a listener. We always want to hear from you if you're attending one of these Raw, Dynamite, SmackDowns, or Collisions to be our on-site correspondent. So email us, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. But I noticed a bit of a groan in the crowd when he announced the Battle Royal for his title defense. I don't know if people are kind of had enough of battle royals, or if they just like Orange Cassidy singles matches, or if something else is going on that caused that. But I kind of groaned too. I mean, I'd rather see Orange Cassidy in a good singles match that's a particular rival of his or someone who's worked their way up, and you're intrigued that maybe that person will end his reign. And you know, a 21-man blackjack battle royal. I mean, they kind of had to have it because they're in Vegas and they just can't help themselves. But I don't like the title being on the line in that context.
Yeah, I was just surprised that he was going to have a match. So I guess that was my perspective as a viewer, was like, it was probably a net negative overall, but I was like, oh, okay, well, at least Orange Cassidy's got a match at the pay-per-view now, which I wasn't sure, since they don't always defend those minor titles on the shows.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, I mentioned the email. Let's go to the comment on Sammy Guevara here. John from Tennessee says, what was that Sammy Guevara promo? He goes from heel to face every week. Does Tony Khan just let these guys go out there and say whatever they want? Has Sammy ever seen any other form of pro wrestling besides PWG? This company does a lot of great stuff, but really struggles with the basics of pro wrestling. The second show could be a complete disaster if Tony doesn't listen to some of the veterans working backstage. And speaking of Collision, will you or someone at the Torch be doing a live post-show? Thanks for all the great content. Everyone go VIP. That is the plan. I'm still in my denial phase. That's a show that needs live coverage, deserves live coverage. I'm still in my denial phase. I will shift out of that soon and start thinking about my life and all that. But, yeah, I mean, for sure out of the gate, I'll be hosting some Collision post-shows, and then we'll address things from there. Like Tony Khan, maybe next week we'll have a big announcement about that.
Yeah, as long as they're live. If they're taped, I think you are in your right to not do pushes, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, well, and that's worth noting. I mean, there's one of the shows was taped, or is going to be taped on their schedule. Hamilton, Ontario show on June 29th. But five out of the first 6 weeks they announced are live, which is good. That was, you know, there's been talk, oh, there might be some Thursday tapings, and are they committed to making this live? The press release says it's a live show. It doesn't say live every week. And so I am curious, you know, once we get past this tour, how ticket sales go. Tony talked in that statement, hey, we are, it's going to be a hot ticket and a great show. Come join us. So we'll see how it holds up over time. I think it's smart to go to Canada for those first shows. And you know, first time in market, they're going to have hot crowds. Saturday night is going to be, you know, easier to draw than Wednesday night for a lot of – it's going to be more attractive to a lot of people. I think there's a chance they do very well, but there's also a chance, you know, to go into – they have to have twice as many cities, or they have to go to cities they're already going to twice as often. It'll be a blend of both of those things. And, you know, are there diminishing returns? And we still need to know, is CM Punk going to be part of the show? Anyway, so let me read the Sammy email, and then we're going to talk Punk, because I keep delaying that. John asked about – the Guevara promo and bouncing back and forth. Tony does let the guys go out there and say whatever they want. I mean, there is something to that. And you know, there's something to be said for that. That you know, Todd Martin talks about this, that there's going to be some bad that comes with it. But as a contrast to WWE, and because when it's good, it's so much better than when someone is just reciting something that they've memorized. So you kind of got to take some bad with the good if you want that good to be there. I think I don't think that should take the wrestlers off the hook or the producers, agents, coaches, bookers. It doesn't take them off the hook for bad content or ill-advised statements. Like, you don't have to memorize a script to expect AEW to have their team of experienced veterans, people who know what promos are all about, whether they're good at them or not in their career. You ought to know what constitutes a good promo and what should and shouldn't be said, and what the constitution is of your character, what you're going for in terms of a crowd response and how to deliver on that, how to stay away from the temptation to try to say something to a group of people on social media that you'll get the instant feedback on if you go to Twitter afterwards, versus things that are about drawing big money and that have nothing to do with that. So I would say that unscripted promos where wrestlers come up with their own stuff is good, but there's certain people that I think should kind of walk through it backstage before they give it. And there should be somebody who's really good at promos going, all right, this is something to build on, but here's a couple things the last time you're on live TV that you did that maybe pulled the crowd, that didn't ignite the crowd reaction you're looking for. And here's a way from my experience, my observations of successful promos and knowing your strengths and who you are as a character, here's what you could say instead or how to say it differently. And I just don't think that stuff is going on enough in AEW. So it's a false choice to say, well, when people are not exciting or screw up on live promos, we should switch. Some of this is just not having the depth of staff or the quality of staff behind the scenes to say, all right, here's what we're going for, and here's how to take your skill set and get closer to that. But Sammy in this promo stayed away from meta stuff. There wasn't any grab for social media attention, but he's a little bland. You know, we talked about it. So Tyler, what do you think about what John said?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with what you're saying there any more than I already do, Wade. I mean, I just think, you know, I would also prefer, like Todd says, that it's this setup as opposed to reading a screenplay for every performer out there. I think it makes the show feel a little more, you know, lack of a better term, raw and a little more real than the alternative of that. So you get the good and the bad. I think it's also the ultimate sink or swim. And Tony Khan and the agents, I guess, to a lesser extent, have to be aware of that. And if someone is going to have a promo that is not successful and they're not, you know, if I'm Sammy Guevara, and I don't know the backstage dynamics, but I'm certainly finding anyone that I trust that has ever delivered a good promo ever in the history of the business and trying to get 5 minutes of their time and just kind of running what I'm planning on saying tonight and get their feedback. Now they do that every night, but this is a big promo for him. It's the most he's going to talk before a world title match. You never know if you're Sammy Guevara, if you're going to get another world title match on a pay-per-view ever again with AEW. So, you know, I think there's things like that. And maybe he did. I don't know if he did or didn't, but there's things where you got to take your career into your own hand, especially within AEW. And that's a positive of the company. Like you can accelerate more based on your merits than you can maybe in WWE, where if you're not handpicked, it's going to be a longer road to get there. So you get the good and the bad, but I just don't think that the intention of what you said of the management of the company, the structure of the company, but also for certain individuals, it seems like there's not that, you know, we talked with the Elite tonight, and I think they have a similar issue that Sammy potentially has here, where you got to really hone your craft and be really looking for advice from other people. And I don't know if that's happening as much as it could with some of the talent getting a lot of TV time right now. You know, Christian Cage is a good example. Like, I'm sure he was available and I would have walked up to Christian Cage and like, hey, I'm transitioning from heel to babyface here. What would you do? And I think he would definitely give you some good pointers. But again, I don't know. It didn't happen. I just know that's what I would do if I was him tonight.
Yeah. And not even with the best case scenario and the best of intentions and best practices, sometimes people just, you know, they're going to deliver what Sammy did and it's not jump off the page, mm-hmm. start making promos. But there's enough instances of people saying things that it's just a foot in your mouth or stepping in a pothole and you're just like, no, you know, and I think that's what John is getting at with his email. You know, has he ever, you know, seen wrestling with PWG? Like there are just things that don't belong in a national cable show that are totally understandable and productive and fit the culture of other pro wrestling presentations. And sometimes that wisdom isn't there with some of this crew because a lot of them are inexperienced and, you know, they're not getting the type of guidance from a top shelf, you know, experienced, engaged team of producers that they should. Okay. Let's address the Collision announcement first. AEW, we've talked, you know, around it a little bit here, but I think everybody knows Collision announced officially now starting. They haven't announced the first date, which again is notable. June 17th is the date, and it is to be announced. So I'll get to that in a second. But then they announced June 24th in Toronto. They'll have what they call a special Thursday taping on June 29th in Hamilton, Ontario. Then they're in Saskatchewan, and then Calgary, Alberta, and then Newark, New Jersey after that. What do you think about what we learned today about Collision, which isn't much other than what we expected in terms of the show? Because I guess this is what I'm getting. I don't want to ask a leading question, but I don't want it to be quite that open-ended either. Should Tony have said more, or should there have been more from somebody about why this show exists and what the format is that will differentiate it, or at least a teaser that news is coming, that there's a purpose for this show. I know in the press release, Tony Khan says we have so much talent, we needed another show. It's like, okay, you know, I mean, yes and no, but is that really a reason to add two more hours of programming? Should there have been a little bit more about a mission statement or what this show is going to be about other than here's the logo and the name and two more hours and it's Saturday. Wrestling's coming back to Saturday.
Oh man, that's a tough question because SmackDown's what? 99, 98 was the first when SmackDown premiered. Do you Wade remember how WWE handled that? I do not personally.
Reference. Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I don't know how they framed it out of the gate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good question. It'd be fun to go back and watch the announcement of SmackDown becoming a show, because I don't think they did like this is going to be where you see The Rock. You know, that wasn't like a mission, or we have so much talent, we got to do two shows. It wasn't as open-ended of a question, but that's specifically like, do you want to tell your audience this is why it's worth tuning into, other than it's just Dynamite twice as often with a different name?
Yeah, I mean, if I was advising Tony Khan on this specific point, I probably would have advised kind of what they did tonight, because it's such a hard thing of like, A, you're either lying to your audience that are pretty smart and know like, you know, you really didn't need, you know, Rampage is not necessary for this product to work the way it is currently. And, you know, you can't also be like, hey, we're getting a ton of money from Warner Brothers Discovery, so here's another show for you. You know, so you're kind of in between of lying to the audience or being way too truthful to the audience of like, ideally, this would be 2 hours. I would never even have done Rampage, but please watch Rampage at 6:30 on Friday, our special time. So it's kind of one of those things where it's, you know, it is weird that you get a lot more information from a press release at a, you know, kind of a corporate PowerPoint presentation than you do from the actual company giving the product. But I think WWE would do it similarly. And I think that it kind of is what it is. And I would probably do the same thing tonight. It's just like an awkward transition. And, you know, I don't know. Yeah, you can go to your next point. I'm sure you have multiple points here on this Collision news.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't have a strong opinion on Tony's announcement, but I feel like just telling people we have another show, it's going to be a hot ticket and we're coming to Canada, it was like, here's a lot of information because they want to fill the buildings. But they're in a tough situation, and I don't think we can avoid, like, it doesn't make sense to put it off any longer. They, I think, pretty clearly wanted to announce CM Punk tonight. And if you have Punk in good standing and you're ready to go, they might have announced more aspects of the show, in the sense that the first main event is going to be CM Punk against Mojo, or CM Punk against Chris Jericho, the two matches rumored to be the first match. So you can have that news. And you can also Tony Khan could have also announced, we have so many wrestlers that we're going to be having details later on about however they want to phrase a roster split, a brand split, that there'll be, you know, two different, you know, because they like to use, like, we're a sports league, and like the press releases initially with AEW and TNT were about a sports league and competition and that kind of thing. They could just say, we're going to have, you know, two conferences of wrestlers, and there we will have systems where they cross paths, but you know, just for the logistics of wrestler schedules and to give everybody the time that they deserve, we're going to have two different conferences of wrestlers, or two divisions of wrestlers. And CM Punk is going to be the centerpiece of this new show. We're excited to announce he's returning. Our world champs and tag champs will be floating between both shows. They will have to defend against the best wrestlers and the top contenders on both rosters. Like, basically, they might have had more to say, but now if Punk is done again, and we'll get into, by the way, in a moment, what Kenny Omega and the Bucks and Hangman said after Dynamite went off the air. Somebody with a phone cam has recorded it, and we'll pass that along, because there's some CM Punk subtext for sure to what they talked about, what they said to the crowd. But if Punk was there, they would have had a lot more to say. And so I can't blame Tony for not having more to say when I think it's in limbo, because if they don't have CM Punk, they might have to recalibrate their approach to at this two-hour format and not do a roster split. Because the press release, as I wrote, and by the way, I had people in AEW tell me, yeah, you're not wrong when you look at the list of wrestlers. It's wrestlers who have issues with other wrestlers in the AEW locker room. Like the Collision, you know, it's like Andrade, and well, Samoa Joe doesn't, but you know, he's just a good opponent for Punk and gets along with him. But I mean, it was sort of like, you know, or Thunder Rosa has an issue with Britt Baker. So it's sort of like Tony could have said with a little sly smile, like, this, our locker room isn't big enough for all the rivalries and behind the scenes. So we're creating a second show so that, you know, but I mean, that's bad because it's pro wrestling and people don't like each other, are supposed to be fighting each other, not creating a new show so they never have to cross paths. Blackpool Combat Club and the Elite are going to settle it in the anarchy in the arena. They're not going to just go off into separate locker rooms and not cross paths. So it actually is really hard. You'd have to be kind of coy about how you presented it, but the show does feel that way. So my point is, maybe there would have been more news and more substance, but now they kind of got to wait if they can work things out with Punk, because for people who don't know, Punk was originally on the press release, then not on the press release for the show from Warner Brother Discovery Media. And then there's reporting from multiple places, PW Insider, Fightful, that the issue is a steal, that Punk wanted a steal back. There was some wires crossed, some confusion over what would constitute that when Tony Khan agreed that he could be back, but maybe not at TV, because I think there's some people, not just the Bucks and Kenny, who feel strongly that a steal doesn't belong in an AEW locker room based on how things went in the fight with the Bucks after All Out last fall. So Tony might have said yes to something that then he had to retract because he got pushback. I don't know. But politics came up, and then I think Punk just wants an ally with him that he can trust for purportedly for self-defense, ostensibly for self-defense, just to have a buddy who he's doing a favor for, however you look at it. And now he's, you know, in his own head, making this into a huge deal. And I shouldn't say making it. One to him, it is. And so on the day the show was announced and he's supposed to be the centerpiece and Tony's supposed to be talking about it on Dynamite, Tony's got to paste on a smile and act excited when this huge thing blew up. And how's Warner Brothers executives going to feel about Tony's leadership and organization and all that he can't keep his top guy on the court, on the ice, on the field? And there's another, you know, just terribly timed blow up. Is this the last straw, or are they going to try to repair things? My hunch is the delay in announcing Chicago United Center is they might cancel that venue if Punk is not available to them. If this is the end of Punk in AEW, and it's a super fresh story, and I don't have enough sourcing to get a vibe on it, but if it is the end of Punk in AEW because of what happened today, they're probably going to have to run a smaller venue. But if they can patch things up with Punk, then they'll announce United Center. So you can look at it two ways. One, they're going to try to patch things up with Punk and announce United Center next week. Or B, they know they can't run United Center because they're done with Punk, and they just have to scramble to find a new building for that date. The third option is they wouldn't have announced the date at all, and no matter what, and for whatever reason, they're going to save it till next week, which is kind of weird if that's the case, so I don't put a lot of stock in that. Tyler, what's your take on the Punk developments tonight and the lack of an arena and City announced for the initial collision and how I think that relates to everything?
Yeah, I mean, for the audience and everything, like, my personal take on this is I'm exhausted by the constant talk about CM Punk at this point, and I think it's really lessened his brand and legacy overall. If he comes back or doesn't come back, I'm kind of neutral at this point. I think he's obviously got a lot of star potential. But to me personally, no sourcing. I don't want him to, you know, have an Instagram story about me because I do have a family as well. And that he just seems like a guy who wants to get a buyout and doesn't actually want to come back is my personal opinion with no sourcing, et cetera. So take that with a grain of salt. But I'm not super surprised that this gets announced and then it's literally instant that there's some issue with it. That is not behavior of, you know, someone that just all of a sudden had an issue with somebody. So, with the business aspect of it, it makes me wonder what the deal is. Is the deal signed? Is CM Punk part of that long-term deal with the content? I would doubt it. So was he used, or does Punk feel like he was used to get a deal for AEW, and maybe he was okay with that to get the buyout if he could get the deal? You know, there's lots of politics that you kind of laid out there. The thing with Ace Steel seems like a non-starter for anyone logically thinking about the situation, based on how that fight went. I mean, so that seems like a poison pill in a deal. You know, yep. If you look at a political deal, you know, let's talk about, you know, like the debt limit right now in Washington, there's poison pills put in to have things blow up on purpose to make the other side look bad. So that's the vibe I'm getting here. Again, no sourcing, but I think that it will be a blow to AEW intermediately, but long-term might be a positive because there is a lot of talent on that roster and just the health of CM Punk. If he was around, how long before there's another issue and, you know, how long till, you know, what kind of matches he's going to work? Is he going to work once a month, et cetera? So it's going to hurt to not build the show around him from a rating standpoint. And I would probably still put the money on them working this out. But, you know, what was his original contract? You know, let's say 4 years. Like, is he going to work that time out with the injury time built in? Like, I would certainly bet that he's not with AEW 3-4 years from now. So that's kind of where I am. But I've been wrong a lot on this, and I'm trying not to prognosticate too much on it. We'll just see what happens. Either way, I'll be watching. But it is something that, just like Cody was before he left AEW, that's kind of where I am with CM Punk now, where I find it frustrating to talk about him every step of the way, as he alluded to, who's not been on TV for 9 months. But, you know, he's a star, and he's put us he's putting himself in the news as much as anyone else is. So,
well, excuse the phrasing and how it comes across, but I've been right about a lot about CM Punk along the way. and I'm not surprised. And I tried to tell people in as diplomatic and fair-minded a way as I could from the distance that I am, but I am talking to people who have known him for a long time, who have worked with him closely over the years, who are or just became familiar with him during his run in AEW. I've talked to a wide array of people, active wrestlers who have perhaps an incentive to want him around to work with or don't want him around because he's eating up money, you know, salary cap money, so to speak. And people who are non-wrestlers who have gotten to know him or have known him in the past. I mean, and they all, with some minimal variation, have painted the picture of somebody who today, whose today's actions should not, does not surprise me. And by this point, if it surprises you, you've been a little in denial or resisting, you know, credible reporting and analysis and evidence of what's going on, you know, and who he is and how he handles things. And this is not to exonerate everybody who's anti-CM Punk from being a contributor to this. The issue is wrestlers have spats. Wrestlers' egos clash. Punk's handling of it is unique. It's not typical. And it is, I do not envy Tony Khan having to navigate this situation with the way that Punk handles it compared to others. So a lot of people handle things poorly. Punk, I don't even think Punk handles things poorly. He handles differences severely, where it becomes untenable and unmanageable. And even when he's right and there's some concession, there's ways that he handles a situation that exacerbates the problem or creates new problems that then leads to people pushing back against wanting any reconciliation or compromise. And that's what I mean when I say handle things uniquely, because he can be right, he can make progress, and then he can undo it. And that's been his history. And people who have known him for a long time say he's getting worse in that regard. And they, you know, so, and they have their own opinions on how Tony should handle it or what Punk should be doing regarding this recurrence of things that are happening. But yeah. And so I'll just kind of say that I'm not in the predicting business, because I predicted Punk would never be brought back. But that part of my equation was not they would create a whole new TV show for him so that he could be away from everyone. Mm-hmm. But my reporting that he wouldn't be back was based on things that were, you know, inferred to me or implied to me, and inferences I made where and then a variety of those, but also straight out things that were told me, people with strong opinions with influence who thought that guy's not going to be back in the locker room, I'm part of that kind of thing. And I just don't think it's softened. And every time, I shouldn't say it hasn't softened, it hasn't repaired itself fully. And every time it's softened, something happens that then leads to people saying, as I have reported for a while, there are people in that company who believe Punk does not want to come back. He wants a buyout. Poison pill's a good way to put it, Tyler. He does things to sabotage progress, because whether he consciously or not, and I'm not ruling out either, doesn't actually want to come back. He just wants the settlement and to go away, but he doesn't want it to be a decision he made. He wants it to be something he's blaming others for, so the blame gets shifted and he's the victim. And navigating that, and especially if that's not his overt goal, but it's sort of self-sabotage in a subconscious way or something, I mean, who knows? And there's all kinds of theories trying to analyze Punk and what's going on here with him. But at some point, and I, you know, somebody today told me in AEW that he thinks Tony finally is going to see Punk in the way that others in AEW see Punk, which is more trouble than he's worth. And I'm not convinced of that that's where Tony Khan is. And he's not going to show his hand on this, because he didn't show his hand on stuff regarding Cody at all either when this stuff was happening. And in a way, I admire him for it. I mean, I think it's totally his prerogative and his business. If he doesn't want to share it, he doesn't have to. But we'll find out. you know, is this the final straw? But man, the stakes are high. You know, you've got these Warner Brothers executives who are like, yes, we got this property, we're expanding it, we're investing in it. And the guy that they, a lot of Warner people think is the top star, and that Tony's tried to, you know, convince them is back and we can work with him, has another blow up on the day of the upfronts, on the day of the announcement, and his name has to be removed from a press release. And the show is all about him. You know, he was going to be the centerpiece. I mean, I just, you think back about, if you told Tony Khan 5 years ago, by the way, here's some things that are going to happen in your first 4 years promoting. You wonder if he wouldn't just be like, I'm going to focus on the Jaguars and just kick back and watch wrestling. This is, but some of it is, you know, brought on by himself. Some people would say he should have written out Punk halfway into the Q&A when Punk was emasculating him in front of everybody in that media Q&A. And that should have been the break point. And he should have written him a check to make him go away and moved on. And then we wouldn't have had, you know, 9 months, give or take, whatever this is now, of 8 months of drama and people wondering, is Tony going to actually bring Punk back the way that he disrespected him right sitting next to him? And I know Tony lost respect. People lost respect for Tony in some circles in the locker room for not just going, Punk's a big star, I'm a big fan of his work, but no one does that to me. But, you know, but Tony's a numbers guy. Looked at the ratings. He saw ratings go down when Punk wasn't around and up when he was around, and he wants to expand and make money. And, you know, so anyway, yeah. Tyler, anything you want to add to that, even though you're – by the way, a lot of people when I ask about Punk are like, I am too exhausted to talk about it, or he's so exhausting. I mean, that kind of language is used and used it too. Mm-hmm. And I'm there – I feel that way too, but, I mean, I can't not on a day like this, you know, react to it and give my take on it and try to convey, you know, what I'm hearing and what, you know, what my read of the room is in AEW right now, and that's kind of where I think things stand.
I mean, it's just so tough. I mean, really the only example in modern wrestling we have in North America is Vince McMahon, right, from this Tony Khan role, and it's that best for business. But you also don't cross him, and it's such a unique character that I think, you know, 99.9999% of people would have an impossible – would not be able to duplicate what Vince McMahon did. I think Tony Khan is more – you know, I always view, like, Tony – not that we're the same person, but like if I'm in Tony's role, I can see me doing a lot of the same things and making a lot of the same decisions he's done. And, yeah, I mean, if you can expand, you know, would I want to have 5 hours of content? No. But would I also like, you know, over $1 billion over 5 years for my wrestling company that, you know, I started with family money, you know, probably. Right. And there's lots of things where it's like, well, you know, is this the best case scenario? No, but is this what, you know, this is guaranteeing my company is going to exist for 5 more years. It's hard to say like, well, yeah, this guy emasculated me and I'm going to, he's done. And if he does say that 9 months ago, is his company now on shakier footing and maybe it's guaranteed for 2 more years. And then he's got to really, you know, there's lots of things in here and it's easy to, when we're not in the position to say what we would and wouldn't do, but yeah I mean, it's tough. And it's just a unique situation in wrestling is a business I wouldn't get into personally for reasons just like this, even though I love watching it. So, yeah.
And there's aspects of the way Tony has handled this that are, you know, like you could say, oh, it's naive and too trusting, but there's an admirable aspect, which is he likes Punk. He likes Phil. He might think of him more as Phil than Punk now when he's working with him as a boss. But he also likes the CM Punk character, and he's like not making it personal. A lot of people be like, you talk about me like that and my company like that, and you are insubordinate, and you know, F you, I'm done with you. And a lot of people deal that way. And Tony's temperament isn't that. You know, Tony's is let's be reasonable, let's work it out. We can let's push through this. I'm going to set aside my personal feelings for what's best for the fans, for what's best for the opponents that Punk can wrestle and help elevate just by sharing a ring with them. And what's best for the business. And, you know, but sometimes it's just not meant to be. And you wonder if we're not getting to that stage where is, you know, with all the best intentions and setting ego and heart feelings aside, it's not meant to be. Tonight after Dynamite, Kenny and the Bucks and Hangman addressed the crowd. Thanks to Eric Kroll for sending along highlights of this on the clip that he saw on social media. Kenny talked about how he never thought he'd be able to sit down in a room again with Hangman, but Punk was clearly the subtext. And he said, but here he did it for the greater good, i.e. reunited with Hangman. Sometimes grown men can hash it out for the greater good. Proceeded to offer beer, and Kenny made a straight edge reference. Again, you know, a acknowledgement of Punk. And then Hangman gave Kenny and the Bucks some milk, and they toasted. So, that's an acknowledgement of the CM Punk situation by Kenny and the Bucks. I don't think we can read much into it other than if you're Tony Khan and you're trying to work things out with Punk, and I do have no insight right now, hopefully by tomorrow I will, into what the mindset is behind the scenes on Punk. I think the people whose heels are dug in are more dug in. I'll just say that when it comes to not wanting to be anywhere near him or share a locker room with him. Or think he's more trouble than he's worth, even if they would say hi to him and smile. I think there are people like that too, who are like, hey, Punk was cool with me, I liked him, but my God, he's toxic. You can't have him around, and I will smile, I'll be his friend, but I don't think he should be here. And there's people like that who don't hate him, but they just don't think he should be welcome back. But if I'm Tony and I am trying to patch things up with Punk, I mean, I don't think that's super inflammatory, but it's Punk, and he might think that's being shown up or publicly mocked. Tyler, what's your take on that? Not having seen it probably, but hearing Eric's summary of it.
Yeah, I mean, I would put it on the fairly innocent side and more just the elite doing elite things. You know, that's more in reference to, like, if none of the CM Punk news came out today and we weren't talking about everything we talked about the last 20 minutes or whatever, I would not have a problem with this. It's just more of a reference of the meta of like, oh, we haven't announced Punk yet, but he might be coming back, you know, that sort of thing. So, but you know, if that's a problem for CM Punk, then, you know, what's it going to be, his first feud without, not against Samoa Joe, and someone's going to bring up, you know, someone bit me or whatever. Like, when you don't have scripted wrestlers, like we talked about earlier, someone's going to make a note of this whole thing. And is CM Punk, just like he did with, I thought the Page stuff to begin with was pretty innocuous, and that led to the whole blow up before. So if he's going to find something at this point, and
that's my point. Yeah. Like, yeah. Just like, so, there's times you just don't want to allude to him or do any sort of parallel promo with a, you know, with a message or a wink and a nod or subtext, because it's Punk, and he is likely, based on the past, going to interpret it in the most inflammatory, worst way possible that makes things worse. And,
yeah,
you know, did Khan approve, you know, green light and go, yo, guys, do whatever, I'm done with this guy. I mean, by the way, Tony has a temper. Like, I've talked to people who are like, there's times when he needs to be cooled down over stuff. Mm-hmm. So when I say Tony doesn't take this personally, I mean, I do think he probably has taken some things very personally. He just doesn't show it publicly. And then once he cools down, he's like, okay, the businessman takes over. Let's make this work. But I have talked to people who have been in a position to try to call someone over who can say, can you calm Tony down right now? Like, he's really worked up over something. So in terms of his demeanor, I can imagine this being a difficult day for Tony, despite the smile and the statement that this was an exciting, wonderful day for AW. I can imagine he was pretty heated, and it's possible, you know, he was okay or green lighted or encouraged. Just go out there and, you know, I mean, don't overly do it. But go ahead and make some references, because I got to pick sides, and I'm picking the guys who are here tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe. Or, you know, they're also negotiating deals, three-fourths of that group. So yeah, maybe they're in a position too of like, yeah, I don't care what you say, Tony. I have a diminished amount of respect from you, you know, from 9 months ago, and you're a negotiating deal with me, and I can go to WWE if I want to. So I think you're more likely, what you just laid out is possible, but they might just be guys who don't care enough to, you know, listen as well. So, which would be a ton set of problems, but
yeah, that's exactly. I mean, that, yeah, there's not a lot of that. I mean, the curtain call led to a lot of problems for Triple H, especially when, you know, when people went against the script and improvised under Vince McMahon's watch. The question is, when does Tony, you know, does he ever have that level of respect from his crew or reputation where you don't even think anyone would dare do that? And I don't think that's the view people have of Tony's leadership right now. There's strengths and weaknesses, and there's things that there's, you know, pros and cons, but I don't think anyone's like, well, no one would dare say anything off camera to an audience that Tony didn't approve ahead of time. That's about a controversial subject, especially if it's, you know, three EVPs. Okay, let's bring Keith from Virginia on into the conversation here. Keith, what's on your mind about everything going on in AEW?
Hi, guys. I think one thing I haven't seen a lot of coverage of, or you know, maybe people just don't agree with me, but the fact that they didn't announce a TV deal today is extremely telling to me. If they weren't close, or if they weren't going to announce it, word should have gotten out somehow that they weren't going to announce
it.
It strikes me as a last minute thing, which is, and you know, with Punk and the stuff happening with him, I can't help but wonder if it's related. And if it is, you have to cut ties with this guy. If he's messing with the money, I mean, just the fact that he was on promotional materials and then they had to take him off is a bad look when you're dealing with the company that's paying you that much money. I just don't see the upside with bringing him back. He's, at this point, he's just volatile. He does things only for himself and his own, I don't know, predilections or whatever. And he's just going to keep blowing things up, even if he does come back. So I'm kind of on the side of you got to let him go, like, immediately. Trying to work it out again is just going to make it worse. It's going to tell him, okay, well, I have to do something even more explosive to get you to, I don't know, either let me go or realize that I'm the boss and that can't fly. So what do you think about that with the TV deal, and why do you think it wasn't announced, and you know, the other stuff I said?
No, great point. I mean, I'm intentionally not commenting on it because I don't know if there was ever for sure going to be an announcement of a new deal today. There was an assumption there would be in a lot of places. And maybe there was, and maybe this blew up the deal or caused, you know, led to a change. But I just want to ask more about that, because up front, you know, the upfronts, and Tony said that, like, everybody knows the corporate TV jargon of what an upfront is. Like, you want to use kind of more, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm underestimating people, but I think you'd want to say, you know, Warner Brothers today, when they were announcing their fall, their new lineup of shows on their networks, you know, we were part of that. We're proud to be part of it. Like, use, you know, regular language, not jargon like upfronts, but maybe that's a more common term than, and I just am worried about it and I don't need to be, but that's a little sidebar. But I'm not ruling that out, that they wanted to have an all-inclusive big announcement about, you know, additional years for Dynamite and really make this a big deal, because certainly they hyped that it was going to be a big deal. And, you know, I mean, adding a Saturday primetime two-hour live show is a big deal. Like, it's just enough to fit. There were expectations that today would be bigger and there'd be more to it. Tyler, what's your take on what Keith brings up?
Yeah, I mean, because there's also, like, what is being integrated into Max, the streaming app, right, is all going to be on there, all that stuff. I thought we were going to get answered today. And maybe it's just a slow rollout to kind of, you know, if I'm Tony Khan before all this, I might want to slow roll some of that good news, because it's always good to have some good news for your business than to kind of dump it all at once if Warner Brothers is not going to announce that at this event. Or it could be something that's, like, you know, on the, you know, 1 yard line is getting finished. And I don't know if CM Punk is the hindrance to a 5-year deal, et cetera, then I think that's pretty shaky corporate forethought by Warner Brothers Discovery to have one person kind of hold up a deal for an entire property. You know, if you look at, I don't know, Yellowstone as an example, is a very popular show. Their star, Kevin Costner, is not wanting to do the last season. So they're kind of doing a new version of the show, and that is going off without a hitch as a apples and oranges comparison. And, you know, I just don't think that's there. So, you know, also they're a private company, so they're not going to announce, like, dollar figures like WWE would, because they're a public company. So there's that aspect of it too. It's really whatever WWE wants to release or Warner Brothers wants to release. And maybe Warner Brothers wants to do it on their own, and AEW is respecting that. So yeah. I don't read as much into it because I don't think one person, especially outside of wrestling, CM Punk is that much of a difference. I think they're just more like, hey, we pay way less for this than we do NHL hockey, and this does a better rating. So this is awesome. Let's keep this going.
Yeah, I do think there's some people at Warner Brothers who are wrestling people, or, you know, TNA ran into this with the Spike TV people, where they were like, if they knew a name from the 90s Monday Night War period, they're like, yeah, bring them in. And it's like, well, wait. There's like this whole group of wrestlers who weren't part of that, who have created this identity for TNA that we want to build on and not look like we're living in the past. And it's like, no, but what, you know, what about Sting? Wouldn't it be great? You know, like, so, and there's some of that, you know. You know, the type, the ones who are, you know, kind of more casual mm-hmm. fans, they're in a position of power. And now this is their chance to influence things with big stars, you know? So some of that I think is at play here too, but yeah. Yeah.
It just kind of, I was just saying, it just kind of feels to me like for a guy who's so perpetually on the internet, Tony kind of knows what people are talking about. And it feels like if Warner Brothers doesn't want to make that announcement today, or they're not close, you find a way to get that out. You, I don't know, leak it, whatever, or just outright say it, because you don't want that expectation out there. And, you know, people expected a thing and then didn't get the thing. So, I don't know. Anyway, thanks, guys, for taking my call.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. I'm glad you chimed in with that question, because it is worth asking. Keith, appreciate it. You know, is there something? Did this blow up a deal or delay the announcement of more of a deal? Yeah. So, and you know, I've got, you know, calls and texts and messages into people in AEW and some in WWE to kind of get their take on things, and so I hope to have more on this on a focus on AEW. Focus on AEW version of the Waykiller Hotline for VIP members, hopefully tomorrow or Friday, as I gather more information and things kind of shake out. Because man, what a mess. All right, let's go to Bryant in Boston next. Bryant, thanks for calling. What is on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Thought it was a really good show, but just a quick question for you. Did you ever get the +3 and the +7 day figures for that show that did the 700-something thousand figure?
That would have been 2 weeks ago.
Yes, I believe so.
Is that right? Yep. So yes. There's a 2 week delay on 7 day figures, but that would have been the May 3rd episode. So let me look at the 3 day figure. We have. We don't have a 7 day figure yet. I'll get that tomorrow. But the May 3rd. Yeah, so the May 3rd episode of Dynamite that drew 776,000 viewers grew by 97,000 viewers after 3 days to 873. The prior week did 863,000 and grew 130,000 viewers after 3 days. The week before that did 830,000 viewers and grew 94,000 more to 924 after 3 days. The week before that grew just about 106,000 after 3 days, 866 to 972. So they weren't way off from their growth, but they weren't above it to make up for the drop off because of, you know, maybe the, I don't know why you're asking, but the competition was stiffer because of other things on TV. I think that was that the Trump CNN thing also? In addition, well, no, that's huge numbers. But
That was last week, I think. Yeah, I don't understand.
But
oh, good.
No. I'm just saying it didn't. So I'm always curious about that too. Does the number below normal, if there's some live programming on that pulls people away, does that mean there's a bigger jump after 3 to 7 days? And in this case, the answer is no. You know, it's on the lower end of the range of growth after or of DVR watching after 3 days.
Yeah, I just grew puzzled as to why Vanderpump Rules rates so high. That puzzles me. But anyway, do you think there's any truth to the sticking point with AEW and CM Punk being a steal? Because if that's the reason, that's kind of a crappy reason.
I mean, why do you think it's a crappy reason?
Well, because for what he did, he deserved to get fired, and he deserves to stay fired. If the, you know, the story about him using a chair and whacking somebody with it is true. I mean, there's no reason why he should. I mean, if he wants to, like, accompany, like, Punk and give him advice and stuff, that's fine. But he shouldn't be, like, anywhere near that locker room. Just, I don't know what the situation with Punk is. It just seems like a mess, or maybe they're trying to work us or something. But I don't know what's going on with
that. I don't think
they're
trying to work us right now. Yeah, if they're trying to work us, it is the most counterproductive way. Yeah. I mean, come on, that would be just crazy. Yeah,
I just think out of all the reasons for CM Punk, I know Ace Steele's his friend and stuff, but after what Steele did that seems like a stupid hill to die on if Punk I'll just move on now.
I relate to your exasperation over all this. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing is ever simple with CM Punk, unfortunately. But you didn't get the 3-day ratings for last week yet, did you? Just curious.
I get ratings once a week, and 3 days are 1 week delayed,
okay.
And the 7 days are 2 weeks delayed.
Okay. All right. Well, enough of the ratings question. Sorry about that.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. All right. The show overall is pretty solid. I mean, the way it began, I really like the way it began with Wardlow, Christian, and Luchasaurus. It was just like a straightforward. We don't get enough of these, I think, in AEW, just in wrestling in general. Like the face comes out, calls the guy out. The heel, for once, doesn't act like a chicken shit. And comes out, gets in his face, and then kind of manipulates the situation to his advantage and just kind of gets the drop with him on the beatdown without acting too much like a coward. So I thought there was some pretty good storytelling overall. Just wondering what you guys thought were on the segment.
Tyler, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think you can count on one hand where Dynamite has opened in this sort of fashion without an Orange Cassidy match, especially in recent weeks. But yeah, so that's always good to change things up. And in the last couple of weeks have been a nice change of pace. The women's match has moved from 9:25 to about 8:45. So that's been, you know, some change of pace too there. But yeah, I mean, it's good in a vacuum. I'm not loving the story personally, just from all the Wardlow stuff we talked about earlier. But yeah, I like a heel that is booked as someone who is kind of a mastermind and actually kind of is in his own crappy way that gets everyone to boo him. So Christian knows his character, and, you know, I'm sure he would like to be in the world title scene, not in the TNT title scene, but he's committed to this character, and he can lose and still be effective, which is an important feature for someone in his position.
Brian, go ahead.
Follow
up or anything else?
Yeah, I didn't like the booking decision to take the title off Hobbs. I mean, the storyline was there for Samoa Joe has been MIA essentially on AEW television, not so much on Ring of Honor. But I mean, the storytelling going back to when Hobbs took the title from Wardlow, it was there. All you had to do was have Joe come out and cost him the title because he was pissed off at losing the belt at the PPV. Instead, you just bring in QT Marshall, and that whole thing was flubbed from the very beginning. I think QT Marshall is getting high on his own supply a little bit, and in doing so, he kind of, I don't know, sabotaged the push of Hobbs. There was so much they could have done with that. And I don't like that. But anyway, you mentioned the women's match. It is nice having it in the first hour, so the crowd isn't as dead as it usually is. But the one thing I didn't like, I mean, I always like Tony Storm. She's one of my favorites. But the things I don't like, it's just one. The interference in the women's match is mainly with the outcasts and whoever they're facing that week has just gotten to be excessive. And he's like, everywhere you look, the ref is a moron getting distracted every bit.
Yeah.
And it's just, it kind of harkens back a little bit to, there was a match way back in TNA, I think, between Raven and Jeff Jarrett that had like 13 people interfere in it. It's kind of get vibes. Yeah. Or the late stages of WCW when like every main match was filled with interference. And it just kind of has that vibe a little bit. They even had on Rampage, they even had distractions for Toni Storm to beat Allison Kay. I mean, come on. They need to stop doing that, and, or at least lessen it a bit and make the refs not look like total complete idiots. I mean, refs in different sports leagues like the NBA, NHL, and probably most notably the NFL do their own jobs looking like idiots, but, you know, that's for an entirely different reason. But just wondering what you guys' thoughts were on that aspect of it.
Yeah, I mean, one of my pet peeves is doubled pet peeve. Ryder Strong attacks Jericho from behind. Babyfaces should be attacking heels from behind. That's just stupid.
Yeah.
Jack Perry did it to MJF, and it's like, no, you don't do that. You don't have to do it. There's no benefit to doing it. You spin them around. If you're provoked, you respond. But then the ref called for the bell, rewarded the attack from behind by going, well, then let's ring the bell, when somebody who hit somebody before the bell rings, which is ostensibly the point at which a fight is legal versus a fight being illegal and, frankly, criminal. If you know, once the bell rings, it's like, okay, we've all agreed to this. But if you attack someone and it's not in the confines of a match, it seems like you could, like, press charges. Now, I know that's asking for a little much from pro wrestling at this point. But to reward the person who did the pre-match attack by calling for the bell immediately when they still have the advantage is dumb. And it shouldn't be done. And so there are multiple ways referees look bad tonight. Brian, were you going to jump in?
Yeah, you were looking at you were saying about things that look dumb. What also looked dumb, you mentioned the Roderick Strong Chris Jericho match. How dumb was it for Roderick Strong to have Cole out there, but the JAS not to be out there as well? That was kind of dumb.
Yeah. Well, Tyler, referee, what do you think?
I mean, I think it's more an issue with groups, as Bryant laid out, doing the same thing over and over again. So this reminds me of FTR when they first joined the company, and they were doing the same sort of over-the-top cheating every single match, and it got grating for me as a viewer. And then they pivoted when they, you know, went to more of a gray role and then the babyface role, and they're working now. So I think the Outcasts, just like some other groups have been in the past, heel groups especially, are just relying on the same trope over and over again. And if they subvert that trope even once, I think it makes the group feel a lot more impactful. And like, hey, we faked you out that we were going to cheat, but we actually didn't. And then we win on a roll up because we didn't actually cheat, but we outsmarted you. Like, just doing that occasionally would do it. Or just giving, like having Toni Storm beat Allison Kay clean would help to get away from that being every time. And I think there's different opinion on what some people in the business think being a heel is you have to cheat every single time. And sometimes it's not, you know, like BCC are not going to cheat every time, but are they the most effective heels? That's more of a philosophical question in wrestling, but I prefer that level of heel than the Outcasts or FTR when they first entered the company. So that's just me.
And you bring up an interesting point. The Jay White, Ricky Starks match. I mean, Juice Robinson was at ringside the entire time, but he didn't cheat all that much. So there's that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they outsmarted Starks and got him to, you know, force a match at the pay-per-view, obviously. So
I mean, that was a phenomenal match those two had. The finish was kind of crap, but I guess you kind of have to do it for the pay-per-view. But that was definitely one of the better matches I've seen all year, for sure.
Brian, anything else for us?
just that I hope things, I will just leave off with the general thing that, I mean, the build-up has been good, but they should be announcing the matches sooner than like 10 days or whatever it is, 13 days away from the PPV. I mean, the build-up for some of them has been good, but, you know, Tony Storm, Jamie Hayter, that's going to be a barn burner, and that feels like something they should be building up for a stronger period of time. I just think they have this overall pattern where they get, like, they're telling the stories better than they have for previous PPVs, but they're doing it too late. They gotta start building up like well in advance as opposed to that. So, mm-hmm. Just interested to know if you guys agree, and have a good night. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks, appreciate it, Brian. Okay, so we ran a poll asking, simply, do you wish AEW established most of their pay-per-view matches sooner than they typically do? 79% said yes, 4% said no, and 14% said it makes no difference. Relatively small sample size in the poll we just put up, but still, I'm with the yes people. I think they should, and I think Brian brings up a good match as an example, which is Tony Storm and Jamie Hayter could have been officially announced 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Frankly, Wardlow and Christian Cage, you could have announced that a couple of weeks ago. Whatever. I mean, I would say pick out more matches to announce ahead of time, but then do angles in the final 2 weeks to add a couple others, you know, to kind of have them peak at the right moment and decide, is this a feud that needs a hot angle a week and a half before the show? Or is this a match that just makes sense? It's part of the structure. You earn a title shot. You get it. We announce it a month ahead of time. And then you tell the story after it's announced of how everyone reacts to that match being announced. And they're doing that with the Pillars match. They could, I would say it would be better to do it with three or four other matches. And by this time, have the full lineup announced. Is there a reason for an exception for one match here and there? Yeah, probably. But as a rule in general, try to have them all announced a week and a half beforehand, because there's some people who aren't going to watch next week because there's going to be a big NBA or NHL or baseball game or news event, and they're going to lose a chance to reach those people. Plus, why wait to the last second? Let the last show before the pay-per-view be the reinforcement episode rather than the crazy developments that led to us adding matches at the last second episode. Tyler?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think you, Wade, myself, and everyone listening to this live or on the podcast forum could probably have told could have told someone on the street what the card is going to be for this pay-per-view 2 weeks ago. As you laid out there, a lot of these matches could have been announced. I think that's more on the, if you are on the side of Tony Khan books his show for the hardcore fans that are like him, I think this is another point in that column for you on that debate, because I think Tony Khan is like, yeah, you guys know what the matches are going to be, so we don't have to officially say it. And that's kind of a booking pattern that he has decided. And yeah, just saying, hey, Jamie, Tony Storm is 2 weeks from now. You can do everything you've exactly done here. Same thing with Wardlow, Christian Cage. You know, the Elite happening tonight, I think that cadence is pretty good. So that makes sense to me. Confirming Jericho and Cole, you know, even a couple weeks ago, as soon as they interact, you know they're going to wrestle the pay-per-view. So it's just, you know, what level of fan are you? And if you're the level of fan that can read that, you know, from a mile away, you're probably already buying the pay-per-view. So you don't need sold on it. It's the fan that is on the fence and watches once or twice a month that needs to know the card well in advance to decide, hey, is this something I really want to watch? So I think there's a lot of missed opportunity in not promoting more matches earlier. So I would be on the yes of that poll as well.
Yeah. All right, let's go to a couple more emails here and maybe a couple other topics before wrapping up. Zach in Texas said, gentlemen, it was a strong show tonight. I'll start with a low point. Karen Jarrett is back. The minute I saw her, a particular Elton John song immediately came to mind. I'll let you fill in the blanks, but I'm stone cold sober if you catch my drift. I could have gone the rest of my life without ever seeing that woman on my TV again. I enjoyed the rest of the show. Okay, I'll pause there. What's your reaction to Karen Jarrett pushes on the accelerator full speed until she has go away heat? If they can manage that and manage it and have it in small doses, she's not a bad heel character. And so I'm curious to see. I am hesitant to give slack because I felt this way about Stephanie McMahon's on her character multiple times. Like, it's not as bad as I remember. She's a talented heel. And then she'd come back and cut the first promo. Maybe I'd be okay with it or have some issues. But I'm like, well, you know, yeah, she's a good heel. And then by the second or third week, I'm like, oh my God, she got to get her off TV. Too much TV time. It's undercutting people. It's counterproductive, whatever. I'm a little worried that I'm giving slack where I shouldn't. But I mean, if it's in small doses, I think she can get heel heat and be a valuable or at least not a counterproductive addition to Dynamite and the Jarrett and Company act. Tyler, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I've been on a Jeff Jarrett renaissance as of late of thinking that his character in AEW has actually been pretty fun, and I was very anti him even being part of the company when he first appeared. So also, I did not watch TNA like at all back in the day. So take that. It seems like Zach definitely did. But, you know, this is setting up for Jeff Jarrett to hit Karen with a guitar during the pay-per-view. And like, if I'm Tony Khan and you're selling me that like this person that is a heat magnet and Jeff Jarrett's going to accidentally hit her with a guitar and they're going to lose the match because he's freaking out about that, then and the pops that gets in that crowd, because that's what everyone wants to see. That is a good story for this type of match and the way it's been built. If it continues beyond that, then we got a problem. If she's on every week with Jeff Jarrett, she's a major character and getting more TV time than, you know, Adam Cole, for example. So yeah. It's all in the details, but I think intermediately for this, it's a pretty fun little story for a tag team match at a pay-per-view that feels pretty inconsequential.
By the way, speaking of little details, a little credit to AEW, because I was ready to rant about Adam Cole just happened to be hanging out outside the door that Roderick Strong and Chris Jericho brawled out of. And I think it was Tony Schiavone who said this was part of Strong's master plan all along. His pull is a false count anywhere match, so the implication is he knew where he wanted to go. He wanted to end up in that courtyard outside the building so that Adam Cole would be waiting. He could beat him up. Or you can also argue Cole had time, seeing where they were brawling. He was heading that direction because he wanted to get at Jericho, and it was an ODQ, anything goes, false count anywhere match. And so when he saw they were headed towards the outdoors, maybe you could, you know, rationalize he had time to get there. But my first response is super contrived, you know, like how convenient he was staying out there. But I give Schiavone credit, and probably it was Tony through headset saying, hey, mention that this is probably Strong's master plan all along, because maybe Tony recognized, yeah, this is really dumb.
Yeah, or that Strong, you know, if wrestling is real, he would just have sprinted outside of that courtyard so him and Cole could have had a 2-on-1 against Jericho and pinned him pretty quickly. But, you know, it's also fun to pie Jericho in the face too. So I can't blame him for doing that.
Yeah. All right, Zach, as I enjoyed the rest of the show, I have to shout out Tony Khan's segment about Collision. The letter graphics were an obvious homage to Nitro, but the video graphic was very WCW Saturday Night. It just hit me in all my nostalgia feels. As far as the content, all the matches hit. The women's match was good, and Jamie versus Tony 2 at Double or Nothing should be excellent. Jericho and Roddy had a fun brawl with a perfect ending. Perfect. Just like a perfect phone call. Rush tried to murder Jack Perry on live TV. I'm not sure that was a good idea 10 days before a pay-per-view. Starks versus Switchblade was a very good match, and I'm okay with the finish because they do them so sparingly. That final segment, though, was pro wrestling perfection. Hangman's return and the Elite reunion was everything I thought it would be. Anarchy in the arena is going to be wild. No doubt Anarchy in the Arena is going to be wild. No doubt Roosh tried to murder Jack Perry on live TV. That is true. And he mentioned the Stark Switchblade match. It had the main event spot. It got top billing in their hype for tonight's show, in their posters and graphics and stuff. I think they needed to do more than just have graphics in the corner of the screen saying the match is coming up. I mean, you want your main event to feel like a main event. Show Stark tying his boots in the locker room. Show White talking strategy with Juice Robinson or warming up, you know, like three times during the show, going in and out of breaks. Ideally have, you know, Renee or Alex approach them for comment. And it can mean they can just say, go away, I've got to focus on the match, or just laugh. You know, Jay can have a sinister laugh at like, hey, you know, I'm looking forward, whatever. Just weave it into the show so that by the time you get an hour and a half into the show, you're actually had an hour and a half with that in the background as something that you're getting warmed up for and building up your anticipation. And they didn't do that. So this match needed it too. It's not like Jay White is just this institution in the United States wrestling fandom for the audience that's watching Dynamite, and Ricky Starks can really talk. So I was let down by that. I am fine with the finish for the reasons Zach said. They don't do that kind of finish very often, and I'm hoping for a rematch. Zach, what do you think of my comment on the build, but also the match itself and the chemistry with Jay and Ricky and this chapter in their, what I think is an ongoing feud, of course.
Yeah, I like the match a lot too. I think it was, you know, I saw what it was like at the 9:30 mark it started. I was like, well, unless we're going to get a all-time TV classic here, I think we got something else going on. And then they showed the Don Callis graphic in the bottom. But yeah, I mean, on your point with weaving it through the show, I think AEW's done better on that. From obviously the Pillars storyline has kind of taken that oxygen week in and week out, and I think it's a slow progression. But yeah, I mean, Ricky Starks hasn't talked on television for 6 weeks maybe, and Jay White, you know, if you're a fan, all you know is that this guy's kind of a, I don't know, mid-card heel type vibe right now. So that's not a good aspect for the audience, but I've talked about that a lot all across the torch. But yeah, I thought the match itself was really good. It was good. It showed how versatile Jay White is as a wrestler. If you haven't seen him, he can kind of work anyone's style, which is why I think he's so valuable. And Ricky Starks works that kind of elevated WWE style, which I think is definitely a benefit for him long-term. And yeah, got a really good match out of both of them. And I like their chemistry. And yeah, I don't mind about the finish either, because they do it once or twice a year. So we're all kind of aligned on those points. But I would say AEW is doing better overall with weaving stories throughout the episode. And they just didn't this week with this one. But I think that's also kind of Tony Khan. This is the seventh most important match, eighth most important match on the pay-per-view. So I think he just doesn't deem that worthy to sell it the way you want him to sell it. It would be my counterpoint that I don't actually believe personally.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. JB from Detroit says, hi team. I know Tony loves his gimmick matches, but for what reason has the Wardlow Christian feud called for ladders? When you book gimmick matches for the sake of gimmick constantly, the law of diminishing returns starts to strongly apply. So Christian's known for ladder matches. Wardlow said, if you want to bring ladders into this, then let's make it a ladder match. Do you like the babyface issuing a challenge that plays to the heel's supposed specialty? And is the context fitting, or does it make Wardlow look kind of foolish because he should value his title and understand that climbing ladders is not seen as a strength of somebody with his ring style and body type?
Yeah, I mean, I would like it if Wardlow, especially with this character of Wardlow, was like, you know, I'm better than you. You're living in the past. You have this bodyguard that's protecting you. I'm going to beat you at your specialty. If he would say that explicitly, I would like it a lot more. It would make sense, as opposed to just like, I'm mad, you good at this. You know, it's basically the early Braun Strowman is so much of this Wardlow character that I get, where it's so one note and there's a lot more potential there, I think, in the characters, is why I always harp on it, because I just think there's a lot of value in that in modern wrestling, especially with an AEW, of Wardlow is not – Wardlow and Hobbs – obviously are the same body types, big dudes who can work, and they're just both so underutilized. It's unfortunate, but yeah, I mean, it is what it is. And obviously the way we talked earlier in the show here, but the way Wardlow is booked, if you had Christian Cage and Wardlow in a match one-on-one, the only expectation was that Wardlow would powerbomb Christian three times within a minute and pin him. And then you totally bury that Christian Cage character. So it's the only way to get around the way you've booked him, which is a huge problem with the way he's booked. But, you know, not to berate the point, that's why this is happening the way it is.
JB also says, what was the point of inserting Karen Jarrett into the Jarrett Lethal stable in their current feud with FTR? Did they just feel that the pay-per-view match was lacking any zest and needed a random ingredient to be heated up? My guess would be Karen wanted to be on TV again, and Jarrett pitched it, and Tony Khan isn't good at saying no. And maybe he's a fan of her work. Maybe it's a favor to Jeff, because Jeff's been, you know, good on camera and off camera. Tyler, any thoughts on that question?
Yeah, I align more with you. I think it's the insidious side of Jeff Jarrett backstage, is that maybe like what I pitched as is probably similar with Jeff Jarrett, if I'm guessing, right, is like, hey, use her for this moment to get to have this big moment at the pay-per-view where I look like a buffoon and everyone cheers that she gets hit with a guitar and then that's it. And then somehow if she's around after that, then it's a danger zone. And that's where the sort of working Tony Khan as a negative and the lack of respect that we talked about earlier could rear its head. So, yeah, I think it's more of that of Jeff Jarrett is doing a good job. A lot of these buildings are a lot better than they were 6 months ago. And he's obviously got a lot to do with that sort of stuff. So it's probably anything Jeff wants within reason, he's going to give him because he's delivering for him on that front. And that can lead a slippery slope with lots of people.
Number three, JB says Orange Cassidy and his one-liners in Renee interviews have become a guilty pleasure of mine. Are you enjoying the chemistry with those two, Tyler?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, and they've done the last couple of weeks where Renee is not the only one because it kind of loses its specialness when you see Renee 4 times an hour to kind of even her out with other people backstage, I think is successful. But yeah, of all the categories, I think Orange Cassidy and her and then MJF slapping the mic out of her hand tonight were the most effective backstage segments. So yeah, I've enjoyed that, and it's been a good insight into Orange Cassidy's personality outside the ring and has helped me and it seems like everyone else endear more to that type of character than we were when AEW started and he was a constant complaint. Just think back to when he beat Adam Cole at that Lights Out match. Now, should that have happened? Probably not, but from where we are from that moment with that character, I think is pretty impressive.
All right, then he says, the news at WBD's upfront today confused me. AW is taking on an extra chores, a live production per week, and providing Max with exclusive content and not getting any extra money for it. Seems awfully risky without anything on paper, if what I understand is true. I don't know that. I mean, I don't know where the deal stands at this point. I don't know if the Punk thing shook things up or what. Or they just want to announce it in a different context on a different day. So I don't want to read too much into it till I know more. But there's no way AEW is giving 2 extra hours of content and providing Max with stuff and not getting money. So it's just a matter of that wasn't announced today. Mm-hmm. And may not be announced, like you said, you know, if it's a privately held company and they don't want to disclose figures, they might not. And then it's just sort of up to Tony Khan to reveal it. He's been somewhat open about their prior TV deal. So, but maybe if they end up with less than what people were thinking they were getting and speculating they were getting or reporting they were getting, it might be embarrassing. You know, it's like, oh no, we only got 300 million, not 1.2 billion or something like that. Like if it just turns out like these numbers going around the TV industry, were way off, it might be kind of embarrassing. And it's like kind of being sheepish about it. So it could be a lot of things. I just don't know right now.
Yep. I think that's a safe place to be.
Yeah. Finally, he goes, the announcement of Superstar Billy Graham's death seemed rather random in the middle of the Jericho Strong Falls Count Anywhere match. Couldn't they have waited until a break? As always, love the show and go VIP. Yeah, that was brought up earlier. I thought that was awkward, and there's just no need to rush into the announcement just because they just found out. So yeah, don't that. I think you come out of a commercial, come in and out of a commercial, and you go to the announcers. And you get a photo that you have rights to, and you put it up, and you just go, we lost a legend today, Superstar Billy Graham. And, you know, and then Taz talks briefly about his memories of him, and you move on, you know, and that doing it in the middle of a brawl felt tactless, not intentionally, not maliciously, but it seemed to lack tact.
Yeah, I would agree. And you could even, you know, if you don't have it perfectly set up, I think even next week on Dynamite to open the show, would be totally appropriate, especially, you know, a legend of the business that has no real interaction with your company. I think making sure the news is super correct and you have a nice, you know, like everything you just said, to not rush it, I think is the right way to do it for sure.
Yep. Do you have anything more you want to say about the women's tag match tonight and the hype and the transition to hyping the title match? We just didn't spend a lot of time on that. So just throwing that your way before we likely sign off here.
No, I mean, I liked it a lot. I think the story's been strong. It's obviously been eclipsed by the Elite and BCC story, and they've been similar stories. I mean, the women's one's been a little more juvenile from a booking standpoint, not as graphic, not as serious, but I've liked it. I yeah, I think that the Outcasts work well together, and it's probably the most women per capita that have felt like they have something important going on in AEW history with what's going on now with the six of them. So I think that's a net positive, and some of the best matches we've seen week in and week out in that division. That's not a complaint we're levying every week, so I think that that should be accounted for, that the women's division's been a bright spot.
All right. Anything else you want to add, Tyler?
I don't think so. I mean, we kind of gradually talked about it, but, you know, I think this should have been a home run day from the news and a really good episode of Dynamite and two episodes of Dynamite in a row that were really good. And it's just clouded by what we talked about in the middle of the show. And that's unfortunate, but it is what it is. And that feels like AEW more often than not is pretty good content to really good content and a lot of BS on the outskirts. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Tyler.
Thank you.
Oh, tell people about how they can see, hear, and read more of you.
Sure. Yes, you can go to our YouTube page, the PW Torch YouTube page. Just search that. And, yeah, myself, Zach Adorn, and Stephanie Chase are the core members of the team. We do daily content. Today I talked about the Warner Brothers announcements, and then as soon as I got off the live feed, I saw CM Punk's Instagram post, so that was very fun to not be on live talking about that. But, yeah, every day one one or both or all three of us are talking AEW, WWE, and the wrestling business in general. And, yeah, so if you like what I do, what Zach does, or just the Torch in general, give us a follow, a sub there, and I'm sure we will not disappoint you and give you some different takes on the coverage that you see on YouTube with wrestling. We will respect your time and treat you like someone that, you know, we're just having a conversation about wrestling and not as much some of the other sides, which we won't get into, but I like the way we do things. So check us out.
Awesome. Well put. Thanks, Tyler. Thanks everybody for your, for listening to the show. And if you haven't yet, check out the Tuesday flagship. Jason Paul joined me. We talked a lot about AEW and the challenges of taking on two more hours of programming and what can be learned from history and what's the same and different with AEW going into this new collision era. Plus we talked all the key topics out of WWE, Cody, the Bloodline, the world title tournament and more. We also talked some Impact, some NXT and other topics. So that's over on our Blue Logo show. Search Wade Keller and subscribe or hit refresh if you already have, and check out that show. And we'll be by with the SmackDown post show in a couple nights right here on the Red Logo show. Thanks to Tyler. Thanks to our callers, our emailers, and Eric Rowe for helping out with some news regarding what was said after the show. And we will talk to you all next time.